Well, now we're going to do a little law work. We have attorney Peter M. Spett. Peter is he's an unusual lawyer. He's not the typical divorce lawyer or any of the lawyers that, when you had an accident or you have a speeding ticket. We're not going to talk about that. He does something that's really important, because if you've been an investor and you have now, not yourself doing that you've done some bad things, but maybe some people have just not done what was right for you. We call it misconduct and securities fraud. But as Peter always says, most attorneys, you know, that is a very important profession, and they don't do these, they really do care about who their clients are. But the one thing we have to do is we want to protect the older adults. And that's really what I'm here to do in all respects. We just had the HMO organization on, Peter. And, you know, and there are a lot of HMOs also. And we want people to really treat our elder population properly, because there's no way for them to get help, or if they are trying to earn more money. So the fact that you represent investors with claims of stockbroker misconduct and securities fraud is a very important profession.
Well, thank you very much, Anita, and as always, it's a pleasure to be here with you, and I hope I can inform and maybe even entertain some of your listeners, but most importantly, inform them, and, you know, what you were just saying is absolutely correct. Most victims of financial advisor misconduct, stockbroker misconduct, they don't really even know that it's securities fraud or in any sense. But if an investment advisor advises you badly and you're in securities that you shouldn't have been in, that's securities fraud. It's a strong term for maybe non-lawyers out there, but the law has said that that is securities fraud if you're in unsuitable securities. So, you know, I really like to talk to and advise people who feel that they got bad investment advice, and then I can, you know, tell after being in the a lawyer for 19 years and in this field, particularly securities law, for 12 years, I can tell pretty quickly if there is something that was inappropriately done or illegally done.
Well, I want to ask you a question about this, though. You know, many years ago, people did a lot of the stockbrokers, and that's why they were called stockbrokers. Now I think they're called something else, but stockbrokers and people in investment counseling and they I don't think had the same either guidelines or restrictions on them. Has it gotten a little tougher for them now, so that they have to be more careful?
Well, the guidelines and the rules set by both the Securities and Exchange Commission and the self-regulatory organization that regulates stockbrokers, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, it's called FINRA for short, they're always changing. They're always trying to get better at it. And, of course, with the last financial crisis that we had in the country, the government is looking a lot more carefully at things. So, yes, you like to think that things are always getting better, but in another sense, you see the same issues come up again and again. So people just find ways around, unfortunately, the bad actors find ways around the rules, or they just don't get spotted. And so really there are two things. You have the government, which is supposed to police it, but then, you know, as a investor, you have to do some self-policing and keep an eye on what is happening with your investments. And that is something that I wrote about in this month's Boomer Times, understanding what you're investing in.
You know, Peter, as you were talking, I was thinking about the stock market, and I don't know, is it the went up 14,000 points, and somebody's doing investing. I mean, I remember when it was at 5, and that was high. And then, you know, it went up to 9, and people were complaining, oh, well, it just dropped or something. And then it went up to 10 and 11, and now it's at 14. I mean, I really, and I know you're not here to explain this whole thing to me, but I really don't understand it very much.
Well, that's the thing. Look, the stock market overall, when we're talking about 14, we're talking about the Dow Jones Index. And that's only made up about 30 really large stocks that are always changing, actually, as the years go on. And then you have another index called the Standard & Poor's Index, which is the top 500 stocks. But, you know, these stocks are always changing, and that's one way that we evaluate the markets. I will be one of the maybe few lawyers to say out there that, you know, maybe the stock market isn't a bad place to be as long as you're well diversified. And something that is, and this is what I wrote in my article this month, something that's getting people into trouble right now is, well, interest rates are very, very low, probably the lowest nominal rates in, you know, decades and decades and decades, maybe going back to the Great Depression.
I just bought a car, and it's a used car, 2.9.
Right, right.
Which is unheard of.
I mean, and because interest rates are so low, I mean, yes, it makes it easier to borrow, but it's really hit retirees very hard, right? You can't put your money in the bank, so where are you going to invest the money? And part, I believe, and this is my theory, part of the reason the stock market is going up so high is there's an incentive for people to take more risks with their money and to put it into the stock market. Now, the stock market isn't a bad thing if you're well diversified and you know what you're doing. It's probably better than a lot of other places you can put your money. And, for example, you know, now people are financial advisors are selling different types of securities, such as collateralized mortgage obligations, things with fancy names that really caused the last stock market crash because it was very concentrated in mortgages and in real estate. And there was a housing bubble, and when that burst, and then all those went down and took the banks with it. So, you know, concentration is another really important thing to pay attention to. You don't want to be concentrated in one particular area, one particular type of industry.
All right. So let's say there is someone that calls you, and you can see quickly that they were not counseling correctly. You don't really go to court anymore, do you? What do you do?
No. First thing I do is we do a analysis of everything that they've invested in and look at all their financial statements and look at their general financial picture. And then after we look at the paperwork, sometimes we contact the if I'm representing them, we contact the their financial advisor and their brokerage house directly and point out, you know, the problems. And sometimes we don't go to court, but what we do is we file an arbitration claim, because when you open up a stock brokerage account, usually when you invest in anything in this country, there's an arbitration provision in your agreement.
Meaning, if you're unhappy, then you have to go arbitrate. You can't go. You can't sue.
Right. I would say 85 to 90% of investment suits these days go through the FINRA arbitration, which is the main arbitration forum, and so it's very specialized. It's only handling those particular types of cases and claims, and you know, there are three arbitrators appointed to a panel if it's above a certain amount of money. Above, I believe it's $25,000, you go with three arbitrators. And so though that I think that just recently changed. I think they just actually increased it to 50. You can go with one, but in any event, it goes through this process, and it's still like a court case, but it's not in a courtroom. There's not a judge. It's these three arbitrators that are appointed and or picked by the lawyers, and they decide it. And then once the decision made, it's usually pretty final. There's no appeals or anything like that. So it's a different process, and it's good to have a lawyer who is familiar with the procedures and the industry to represent you if you have that type of claim.
And are these arbitrators, let's say you live here in South Florida. Let's say people are calling you. They live in South Florida. Where would this be local, or would they have to go to New York, or what do they have to do?
That's a very good question. Arbitration claims are always where the customer resides. So it's always they make it convenient to the customer. Now, here in Boca Raton, we happen to have a whole office that has, you know, hearing rooms in it that they're actually they're headquartered in. But if you're in Miami, the hearing's in Miami. If you're in Fort Lauderdale, the hearing's in Fort Lauderdale. You're in West Palm Beach, well, you might have to come down to Boca. I'm not sure. I haven't had one recently. But they usually try to accommodate the investor to make the hearing close to home if it gets to that point. Now, sometimes once you file the claim, of course, this negotiations going back and forth and both sides are discovering the information. As an attorney representing investors, a lot of information comes to me as, you know, part of the process as to what was actually happening that the investor himself or herself didn't even see or know about. So that all comes into play. And sometimes these things are mediated. So there's a lot of ways that it's resolved. But, you know, the initial starting place is usually filing a claim with FINRA.
Okay, that's great. My guest is attorney Peter M. Spett. He represents investors with claims of stockbroker misconduct and securities fraud. His office is located in Boca Raton. I'm going to give you a phone number and a website for him. His phone number is 888-217-4919. And his his website is spettlaw, spettlaw.com. spettlaw.com. So I bet when you go to parties, let's think about, you know, gynecologists have this all the time. They go to a party and someone has to tell them about something. But I'll bet when you go to a party and they ask you what you do, I bet everyone has a story, don't they?
Well, people have stories or they know somebody with a story. You know, I hear it all the time. And by the way, you know, if somebody calls me up on the phone, first of all, there's a lot of good information on my website. But if somebody calls me up on the phone, I'm always happy to for free consultation and to talk about whatever they want to talk about, whether or not it amounts to a claim or not, because it's something that I am passionate about and enjoy talking about. So yes, it sometimes comes up at parties, and you know, you hear all sorts of wacky stories. And during my career, you'd be surprised as to you know, some of the shenanigans that go on. But I wanted to talk a little bit also about, you know, what I wrote about, which is, you know, We have a very respected investor here in this country. His most famous investor, I would say, is Warren Buffett. And he's been in the news just in the last couple of weeks. You know why, Anita?
Yes, because he bought something. He
right.
bought
He bought Heinz.
Right. Heinz. Bought Heinz, exactly.
So why do you think Warren Buffett likes ketchup so much?
I mean, my goodness. See, why is he doesn't like ketchup? It's because I think it's been a long-established company. That's what I would think, but
right.
I don't know.
So Warren Buffett's one of his tenets is do not invest in something that you do not understand.
And he understands ketchup, right?
Well,
no.
You know, we
no,
all
they
know
do
what,
a lot of other things.
They
so.
Do a lot of stuff, but it is a proven brand with hard products. Like, you know what ketchup is. You know what, you know, whatever TV
Weight
dinners.
Watchers is.
Right. You know, this. He can test it, right? He can go in to the company and know what they're making and look at their accounting, and he can, you know, crunch numbers and figure it out. Well, a lot of the problems now, and when I have people come to me, is that they're in something that isn't so simple, right? They're in a company, or worse yet, a derivative or a commodity that is based on a lot of other variables, that it's not based on, you know, pluses and minuses and debits and credits, but, you know, things can happen. And if you read what some of these issuers of these securities have to file with the government, the Securities Exchange Commission. And usually what people receive in the mail, you know, they're 200 pages thick in small type. And they have risk disclosures up and down, up and down. Now, there's a lot of pressure on financial advisors to move these products because they are being issued by their companies or companies in their industry, or they're offering nice commissions. And, you know, so there's incentives for recommending these types of things. And that's where the ordinary investor gets into trouble because they either put too much money into something like this, which is very risky, or they don't know how much the fees are and they don't really look at the opportunity cost of putting their money there versus somewhere else. And or these things become are sometimes very illiquid. There's this investment vehicle called non-tradable REITs. REITs are fine. REITs are real estate investment trusts, and they're traded on the stock exchange, some of these companies, and they're fine. But non-tradable REITs mean that they're not tradable. So they're not tradable maybe for a year or 2 years, and if you want to ever get your money out, well, you're going to have to pay a penalty, or you might not even be able to get your money out.
Well, so, why would anyone want something that's not tradable? Are there good not tradable things?
Well, the reason is because and it's appropriate, I guess, for some types of investors, but I would not recommend it for retirees, is that you get a higher interest rate.
Oh, I see.
But sometimes and this is what we began with. Because interest rates are so low, there's a lot of pressure in order to get the income and maintain a person's standard of living to get something with a higher interest rate. I can only advise extreme caution when it comes to that because interest rates are so low, they don't have to, for more risky types of investment vehicles, they don't have to offer 15% interest. It used to be in, you know, 10 years ago that these same securities that are now paying 5% we're paying 15-20%. So you can just get a gauge of how risky something is usually by how much of a premium on interest rates they're paying. So if it's 5% above what you're getting paid at the bank, well, you know, unless it's like a government bond or something like that, you should think about it carefully and look at it.
And I think what you said is, you know, there are some people who want to do that, but you can't put all your money in. So if you take $5,000 or $10,000 and it won't change your retirement life, that's what you're, I think, really saying, that you have to be very careful. And right. And actually, I think there is something that's told to the stockbrokers that people in different categories and certain stocks, bonds are for certain people and certain aren't.
Right.
Right. And is there a word for that?
Well, there's certain types of investors called accredited investors, which are allowed to trade in certain types of offerings that aren't. It's accredited, like ACCREDITED. I think I spelled that right. Maybe there's two T's.
Accredited. No, you're dead.
In any event, that's for these types of investments are for people with a certain level of income, like I believe it's $250,000 of income per year for the last 2 years, or over $1 million in assets, and they are allowed, it's suitable for them to invest in certain things that aren't suitable for people under those
like
guidelines.
Like Buffett.
Well, Buffett is
and he's not going to do it.
And he's not going to do it.
So that said a lot. That was good that you brought that up,
so,
I think.
So, yeah, I'll talk about some other pitfalls that I commonly see. You know, if anybody ever comes to you, and this is actually on the SEC's website, which I talked about last time. It's a very good website. It's investor.gov if anybody ever wants to look at it. But they say if somebody ever uses the word "I can beat the market," you got to be look at that, and you got to be okay. Red light signals, caution signals should go off, because nobody has a real system to beat the market, even if they say they do. If they mean beat the market, what they mean is you're going to be taking more risks than that it is in the market. So, yes, you can beat the market, but just be aware that if you're beating the market, you are taking a heightened level of risk, and you can just go down as easily as you can go up. So it's been tried for many, many years for people to come up with the ways to beat the market, and nobody's been really great at it, except for maybe Warren Buffett, and Warren Buffett does a lot of homework, and he's well diversified. If you look at his company, he has thousands and thousands and thousands of companies, and he's well diversified. So that's another important thing.
That's good. And so what I want you to do is, if you're one of these people, of course, this is a program to help you not get into trouble. But on the other hand, if you've already done something foolish, this attorney is here to help you. Give him a call. His name is Peter Spett, S-P-E-T-T. You can call him toll-free at 888-217-4919. That's 888-217-4919. 4919, or you can go to his website, which is Spett, that's SPETTLAW.com, SpettLaw.com. So, and his office is in Boca Raton. You can go and talk to him, you know, in person, or you can just speak to him on the telephone. And he's very experienced at this. He will know very quickly. And if he says, I want to see you, come to my office, then you know you have something. Do you have a lot of, I guess you just continue to have cases, don't you? As much as you warn people and we...
Well, that's unfortunately, yes. I mean, it varies by how the market's doing. So right now, a rising tide lifts all boats. So, you could be paying too much as an investor in management fees, for example, and being paying 3-5% of your portfolio and being badly advised, but still be doing okay because everything's going up. However, if you're not doing okay and things are going down, then there's something clearly wrong, and you really should talk to me or another attorney and have somebody take a look at what is going on with your investments.
So, Peter, let's say this happened to someone, and they don't want to go after the company, but they want to have reduced managing percents and charges. Can you help them get that, too? Is that what you do?
Well, usually it's not the management percentages that are going to be the crux of the problem, but will just be an add-on to the problem. Yes, usually, to be honest with you, I usually would try to find them a different broker at the very least if it's inappropriate as to what their goals are. Every broker should be having a conversation with their customer monthly or yearly, at least yearly, about their financial needs and goals and what their need for income is, what the savings are, and knowing the whole picture, because in order to properly advise you, that financial advisor needs to know everything there is that you need that you need your money for and that you have money saved for. And if you don't have a lot in savings and you are going with a financial advisor, well, that financial advisor has to be a lot more conservative what he's recommending to you than somebody who has, as I said, would be an accredited investor with over $1 million in the bank. And so there's a lot of factors that are involved, and it's called suitability.
Suitability.
And all investments have to be appropriately suitable for the customer. And the financial advisor has an affirmative obligation, a duty to the investor to make these correct recommendations.
So if you have been talking with your friends down by the pool and they're telling you all about the things that they're involved in, they may be going astray. You have to be very careful, and you have to do what Peter's been telling you. It has to be suitable for you. And so if it's going to offer you, just like the Madoff, I mean, a lot of people just were so happy to get all that money in, and they didn't realize there was could have been a reverberation of that or something that was very wrong.
Yeah, that's a different type of story, right? The people with the Madoff, that all exploded all at once, and it turned out to be a massive fraud, an outright lie by the by Mr. Madoff, who was handling their money. So, you know, that's another type of case I would handle, is, you know, somebody who's actually out there scamming
a criminal,
right.
Compared to, right. And when you know that that's not arbitration now. That's real big time court, right?
He got
put away.
Again, there are two levels, right? There's the getting your money back as a civil litigant, as a claimant, and then there's the criminal proceedings that's handled by the good attorneys of the state of Florida or the U.S. attorney. So, you know, they handle the criminal stuff. I don't handle, like, the actual criminal prosecutions, but I do try to get everybody's money back at least as much as I can.
Yeah, that's very important that you do try to, of course, recapture what you feel that they've lost. Now, is there a way for you to figure out, if you look at their portfolio, how many times something's been sold, bought, sold, bought, sold, bought, sold? So that could be also a way that's being made money, right?
That's an excellent question. There's usually a problem if there's too much turnover in an account, too much short-term trading. That's called churning, and it is another type of financial abuse. So if somebody sees that in their portfolio, they should call me.
Right. So, we've certainly learned so much from you, and I always like having you on the show, and maybe next time we can go into that churning, because I think that that's a harder thing for people to understand what's going on, I think. So we appreciate your being here, Peter, and your phone number again is area code 888-217-4919, and your website, SPET, with SPETTLAW.com, SPETLAW.com. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.